46. We're going to look at chapter 46 and 47 tonight. We are going to do two chapters because most of 46 is a list, and we won't get into much detail on that list from verse 8 down through verse number 27. It just gives the list of the people that comes with Jacob. And so we're just going to kind of touch on those things that are listed in those verses for us. But we see here Joseph has sent his brothers home to go and tell Jacob that he is alive and that he wants them to come down to Egypt and to reside specifically in the land of Goshen. Pharaoh backs that up, says, he said, tell him, come down, whatever the land has to offer, it's yours. Come down and stay in the land of Goshen. It's the best land for you. And so he invites them as well. And so his brothers go. They take the food that they've gathered here in Egypt, and they go back up to get Jacob to bring him down to Egypt. And we begin here as Joseph's brothers, of course, they go back to Canaan. Remember, they are, Joseph warns them, says, don't be distracted on your journey. So he told them there in chapter 45, don't be distracted as you go to get daddy, because alluding to the fact that they're coming up with, they're going to have to come clean with Jacob in regards to what they've done. And so they're going to ask, daddy, Joseph is alive and he's in Egypt and we found him and he's ruling all of Egypt. But the reason he's there is because we sold him into slavery. And so they're going to have to come clean with Joseph, or with Jacob, as they are going home. So Joseph warns them not to get faint at heart as they are on their journey, but to move quickly, get Jacob and bring him back down as quickly as possible. And so they go back to Canaan then to gather Jacob and the rest of their families and their belongings and to travel back to live in the land of Goshen. But it takes some convincing on Jacob's part to believe what they're telling him. And we read here, beginning in chapter 46 and verse number 1, chapter 45, they told him, verse 27, they told him all the words of Joseph which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. And Israel said, is it enough? Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. So it took a little convincing to get him to come down. And so verse 1 of chapter 46, Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifice unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. Now, Jacob had early in his life, in his young adult time, he had many interactions with God like this. In the time of him meeting the Lord in Bethel, having the dream that he had there, wrestling with the Lord later on as he's coming back out from Laban's house to go into his own country. He wrestles with the Lord all night there. He has these many interactions with the Lord and the Lord's direction. And as we look through Jacob's life, those seemingly stop. And of course, we take on Joseph's life and we look at how Joseph, the Lord used Joseph, and how all this interaction with Joseph takes place and brings to pass this deliverance. But the next time we see the Lord speaking to Jacob is here as Jacob's getting ready to go down into Egypt. I don't know if the Lord continued to speak to Jacob through all of that time. Jacob had that same relationship that he had before, but it seemed like the Jacob from his early adulthood time, he was coming out of Haran there, as he's coming back into Israel or back into Canaan, and he is stops at Bethel and wrestles with the Lord there. The Lord speaks to him and guides him. It seems like a he was more driven for the purpose of the Lord at that time until, and then the next thing we see is his children being born, and we see Joseph being sold into slavery, and it's as if Jacob gets in such a state of depression that there is no, almost no life in him, it seems, until you come to this point. And in fact, you know, he's talking about, of course, talking about dying and so on. He's 130 years when he comes into the land here, into Egypt. He'll die at the age of 147, so he's going to stay another 17 years. He's going to live in the land. But you see here that as Jacob, it seems like he has no desire for life until he's now going down to see Joseph. It's almost like he's revived, knowing that his son is alive and waiting for him there in Egypt. And the Lord speaks to him here in this passage and tells him not to fear to go down into Egypt, that he's got a purpose for him going down there. And he says there again in verse number 3, he says, "I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation." So God gives him assurance for going down into Egypt to leave the promised land. Of course, the Lord is the one called him back to the promised land from Laban's house. But now he's telling him, it's okay, go on down to Egypt. I'm going to make you there a great nation. And so it'll be while in Egypt that the Lord is going to be fulfilling these very promises that he's given to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And so he's going down into Egypt, and the Lord's going to make of him a great nation there. And so while in Egypt, while they are there, the Lord is going to make the nation of Israel from a tribal family into a great nation. Of these 70 plus, in one passage tells us 70, or well, in fact, in Acts chapter 8 tells us 75 people specifically. Of these 75 that go, that are there in the land of Egypt, from them will be an estimated 1 to 2 million when they are at last coming out of Egypt back into the promised land. So I mean a vast growth that God is going to bring to pass in the nation of Israel over these next 400 years. So it's amazing what the Lord's going to work here with the nation and accomplish in them while they are in Egypt. But here the Lord's simply declaring, he's going to make them there a great nation while they are in the land of Egypt. In fact, we read in Deuteronomy chapter 10, Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse number 22, it says, "Thy fathers went down into Egypt with 70 persons, 70. And that's the number that we're given here in Genesis chapter 46. "Thy fathers went down into Egypt 70 persons, and now the Lord thy God hath made thee as the stars of heaven for multitude." As the stars of heaven for multitude. So he's really going to bless them in their time in Egypt as he grows the nation, as he makes them what he's going to make them as a nation. In spite of the fact that half of the time they're going to be there, they're going to be there as slaves. Half the time they're going to be there, they're going to be in captivity. And yet the Lord is going to continue to bless them even in the midst of that, as he makes them this great and vast nation. And so, verse 4, he says, "I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes." And so God declares he's coming down into Egypt with Jacob. He's not sending Jacob without him. And he's going to be the one bringing back up again. But he lets Jacob know that that is symbolic in the sense he's going to be brought back up again. His family will be brought back up. But Jacob being brought back up, he's going to die himself in Egypt, because he says, Joseph, thy son shall put his hand upon thine eyes. In other words, he'll be the one that will close the eyes of Jacob at his death. So he's going to die in the presence of Joseph, his beloved son. And so in the sense that he's going to be coming back out, he'll be brought back out to be buried in the land of Canaan. And so it says there, Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their cattle and their goods which they had gotten in the land of Canaan and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed brought he with him into Egypt. Verse 8 then begins this list of those that came with him. And we are given 66 specifically that came out of the land of Canaan, although it doesn't seem like all the daughters necessarily are numbered, nor all the wives are numbered. So we have just 66 mentioned. But he gives us this list here. And all of these names primarily are familiar to us. We've read these names before when we see these names listed. It says these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanok and Phallu and Hezron and Carmi, and the sons of Simeon, Jemiel, and Jamin, and Ohad, and Jachin, and Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman, and the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, Merari, and the sons of Judah, Er, and Onan, and Shelah, and Phares, and Sarah. But Er and Onan died in the land of Canaan, and the sons of Phares were Hezron and Hamul, and the sons of Issachar, Tola, and Phupha, I guess is how you would say his name, and Job, and Shimron, and the sons of Zebulun, Sered, and Elon, and Jaleel. These be the sons of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob in Padan Aram, with his daughter Dinah. All the souls of his sons and his daughters were 33. So 33 of the children of Leah are a part of this group. Now that's not counting Er and Onan, because Er and Onan had, there's actually 35 of them, but Er and Onan had died in the land of Canaan, so there's just these 33 that will come down into the land. Then it says in verse 16, and the sons of Gad, Ziphion, and Haggai, Shunai, and Ezbon, Eri, Arodi, and Erila, and the sons of Asher, Jimnah, and Ishua, and Esau, and Beriah, and Sarah, their sister, and the sons of Beriah, Heber, or Hebrew is how that's pronounced, and Malkiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah his daughter, and these she bare unto Jacob, even 16 souls. And so there's 16 of those. And then verse 19, the sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin, and unto Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, which Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bare unto him. And the sons of Benjamin were Belah and Becher and Ashbel and Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rosh, Muppim, or Muppim, Huppim, and Ard. Well, let's say it like that. Some weird names there. Muppim, Huppim, and Ard. And these are the sons of Rachel, which were born to Jacob. All the souls were 14. Now, in the final counting here, the two sons of Joseph are not counted with the rest because they are already in Egypt. So they're given a clarification of those that actually came out of Canaan and those that were already in Egypt. They're showing that division there when we get to the end of the list. And so he says, verse 23, and the sons of Dan, Hushim, and the sons of Naphtali, Jaziel, Guni, Jezer, and Shillem. These are the sons of Bilhah, which Laban gave unto Rachel his daughter, and she bare these unto Jacob. All the souls were 7. So all the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, besides Jacob's sons' wives, all the souls were 66. It tells us that there doesn't number the wives there. So all those that came with Jacob out of the land of Canaan of his sons was 66, or 66 of them. And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 110. So that counts Jacob, because he's not counted in the list here, the 66. Joseph and his 2 sons, they make up the fullness of the 70 there that are numbered in verse number 27. Not counting their wives. You get over to Acts chapter number 8, and I'm not sure the verse right off in my thinking. I think verse 14, I believe, 13, 14. Let's just turn over and read that. Stephen here is giving the account of the children of Israel and the history of the children of Israel just before his stoning here, before the Jews will kill him. And he gives this history, and he mentions 75 that came out of the land. And some have suggested that's the five of the wives that were mentioned in the list here is not being counted, that it may have just been 5 wives that came with them. I have no idea, don't know, but he gives a number of 75 here in verse 14. It says, then sent Joseph and called his father Jacob to him and all his kindred 65 souls. So 75 is what Stephen mentions here. So he includes another 5, which may be 5 of the wives that are numbered here that are said to have not been numbered among this group that we have here in Genesis chapter 46. But they come down, these coming out of the land of Canaan, and it tells us in verse 28, and he sent Judah before him. Jacob sent Judah before him unto Joseph to direct his face unto Goshen. So he sent Judah before him to find out, okay, you go tell your little brother, we're on our way. Where does he want us to stop? Where does he want us to go? Where exactly in Goshen is he wanting us to settle and be? And so they came into the land of Goshen, and Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, to Goshen, and presented himself unto him, and he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said unto Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive. And Joseph said unto his brethren and unto his father's house, I will go up and show Pharaoh and say unto him, my brethren and my father's house, which were in the land of Canaan, are coming to me, and the men are shepherds for their trade, have been to feed cattle, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have, and it shall come to pass when Pharaoh shall call you and shall say, what is your occupation? That ye shall say, thy servant's trade hath been about cattle from our youth even unto now, both we and also our fathers, that we may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians. So Joseph says, when I'm going to bring you before Pharaoh and I'm going to declare you all coming in, but when Pharaoh asks you what you do for a living, you be honest with him and you tell him you're a shepherd. Now, whether Joseph had this direction from the Lord or whether Joseph understood the intricacies of the society itself better than what they would have understood, whatever the case may be, Joseph knew that because shepherds, as far as the society of Egypt were concerned, shepherds were an abomination. They were the They were the low people on the totem pole. They were the folks that you wouldn't have anything to do with on normal everyday doings. You would stay away from the shepherds. The shepherds were just the lowly people that we don't have anything to do with in Egyptian society. And so Joseph, knowing that, tells them, he said, look, when Pharaoh asks you, what do you do for a living? You tell him, you be honest with him, that you are shepherds and that you deal in cattle. And that's what you've done your whole life. And what Pharaoh will do is he will keep you separated from the rest of Egypt. And so Israel then will be in that foreign country. They'll receive all that they need as far as their food is concerned, as far as their provision is concerned. They'll have the food to feed their flocks and so on, and yet not have to be a part of the pagan society that was Egypt. They can still remain separate and be apart. So in this regard, Joseph is protecting the children of Israel by using the prejudices of the Egyptian society against themselves. They are able then to protect the nation of Israel while they are in the land there. So he says, when Pharaoh asks, you tell him, you be honest with him, that's what you do, and he'll keep you all separated from everybody else, because as far as the Egyptian society was concerned, they were abomination to be around. So, verse number 1, we read here, it says, then Joseph came and told Pharaoh and said, my father and my brethren and their flocks and their herds and all that they have are come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen. And he took some of his brother, even 5 men, and presented them unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto his brethren, what's your occupation? And they said unto Pharaoh, thy servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers. And they said, moreover, unto Pharaoh, for to sojourn in the land are we come, for thy servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is sore in the land of Canaan. Now therefore we pray thee, let thy servants dwell in the land of Goshen. And Pharaoh spake unto Joseph, saying, thy father and thy brethren are come unto thee. The land of Egypt is before thee, and the best of the land make thy father and brethren to dwell. In the land of Goshen let them dwell, and if thou knowest any men of activity among them, then make them rulers over my cattle. So Pharaoh not only offers them the best land for them to dwell in, there in the Nile Delta, it was the most fertile part of all of Egypt there. There was the plenty of grazing for the animals to take care of. And he said, if you know any of them that are industrious, hardworking of your brothers, put them in charge over all my cattle. Let them take care of my flocks, he says. And so he even offers them jobs. Not only does he give them the land, but offers them jobs to take care of his cattle as well. And so Pharaoh is happy to see Jacob's family rejoicing that they are a part of the land now and dwelling in the land. It says, verse 7, Joseph brought in Jacob his father and set him before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Jacob, how old art thou? And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been. Now, well, we see life so different, don't we? As we get older, we see it differently. But from the time, from a young life, when we're looking at it from the prospect of young age, we feel like life just goes on and on, like it's forever. I remember when my grandpa died at the age of 55. I was 11 years old, and I thought he was an old man. Until now, I'm getting to that age, and I look and say, Grandpa was a young man. He, 55, he was a young man. But, you know, from that young perspective, it seemed like old and way out there, a long way off before we get to it. And Jacob makes a point, he lived 130 years, and he says, my days have been short and full of evil. Short and full of evil. At 130 years, it's just nothing. It's gone. It's flew by. How quickly it's gone. And that's what the scriptures tell us over and over again. It reminds us of that reality that life is short. Even for what we would consider a long life. 130 years would be a long life. But Jacob understood how short it was. Truly how short it was. Years of my life, few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers and the days of their pilgrimage. He said, I'm 130 years old, my days have been short and full of evil, and I've not even come close to what my fathers went through. I've not even lived as long as they lived. Verse 10 says, Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went down from before Pharaoh, and Joseph placed his father and his brethren, and he gave them a possession in the land of Egypt and the best of the land, in the land of Ramses. Here, Moses writing this gives his contemporaries a place that they can consider, because this is before the city of Ramses would be named. When he is calling it the city of Ramses here, or the land of Ramses, and so that would come later, and that name would come later, because Ramses as Pharaoh would come later. But here Moses is giving a contemporary name, so they'll know when the Israelites of Moses' day are reading that, they'll understand exactly where it was that the children of Israel came into the land of Goshen at. And so he gives a time stamp for us there, or a place name for us, that we're able to understand exactly where that is. And so he says, verse 12, and Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families. And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. In other words, there was no other place where you could get bread. I mean, what bread was in the land was what was controlled by Joseph. There was no other place. You couldn't go to the store and pick it up. You couldn't go to the restaurant and order a loaf of bread. There was nothing. There was no other place that you could go. You couldn't go get it out of your field and grind it up and bake it yourself. There was no other bread anywhere but what was put up by Joseph by the order of Pharaoh to feed the people of the land. And so if you wanted bread, you had to come to Joseph and get that bread. That was the only place it was available. It was the only place they could get it. There was none other anywhere else in the land. So there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore. So the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why would we die in thy presence, for the money faileth? So everybody spent all the money they had to survive buying this bread. And then now everybody's without bread, without money to buy, and now they can't buy the bread. And so it says there, when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, they said, give us bread, for why would we die in thy presence, for the money failed. And Joseph said, give your cattle, and I will give you of your cattle, give you for your cattle rattle, if money fails. So if you don't have any money, then sell me your cattle, and I'll feed you with your cattle that you burn. So they brought their cattle in order to get the bread to eat. In verse 17 it says, they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses and for the flocks and for the cattle, the herds and for the asses, and he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year. And then when that year was ended, they came unto him the second year and said unto him, we will not hide it from my Lord how that our money is spent. My Lord also hath our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands. They said, we don't have nothing else but the land that we live on and our own flesh. And we don't have anything else to buy bread with. Therefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land, by us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them, so the land became Pharaoh's. So they sold their land to Pharaoh. They indentured themselves to Pharaoh to have this bread to eat. And as for the people, he removed them to cities. Let me read verse 20. I think I skipped verse. Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof. Only the land of the priest bought he not, for the priest had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore they sold not their lands. And so the people sold all the lands they had. They indentured themselves to Pharaoh to receive that bread, and he moved them out of those lands into the cities, so that he'd be able to feed them easier, being there on location to receive that food off from their lands. Of course, their lands were not producing anything at this point anyway because of the famine, so the lands themselves were not doing any good for the people to reside upon them. And verse 23, it says, "Then Joseph said unto the people, Behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Here is seed for you, and ye shall sow the land." So after a time, Joseph gives them seed and says, "Now go sow the land." And so he gives them the seed for them to go and to grow the crops. And he tells them they become kind of sharecroppers, if you will, on the lands. They sold all these lands to Pharaoh, but now Joseph has given them the seed. As the famine is drawing to a close, he gives them seed to go and sow that seed. And he says there, verse number 24, "It shall come to pass in the increase that ye shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own." So he continues on with the plan that they had previously. The four parts that you grow are yours. They belong to you. We just ask that each year you give the fifth part to Pharaoh. So it sounds like pretty fair trade, doesn't it? They're still giving them. They could have done the opposite. Could have said one part's for you and four parts for Pharaoh. But instead he gives them mercy in this and says, no, four parts for you. So he gives them a chance to earn enough income that maybe they can buy this land back as time goes on, that they can get out of the hole that they were in because of this famine. So the four parts belong to them. Whatever they grow, he even give them the seed for it. And so whatever they grow from that seed, the four parts of that will be for them, and the fifth part be given to Pharaoh so they can do the same thing that they've been doing in the sense of putting up that fifth part for protection of the people against another famine that might come. And so he sets that aside for them. And he says, so that fifth part be for Pharaoh, four parts to be your own, for seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and food for your little ones. And they said, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." This is what the people are saying to Joseph here. So, the third, this is the Pharaoh at this time, he becomes the possessor of everything in Egypt. He has control over it all because of this famine and what has happened. But in the process, the people are rejoicing over it. And it sounds like, you know, from my standpoint, you think about it, and from the standpoint of us, maybe in America, we wouldn't think of it that way. We wouldn't really, I don't think, we would probably be a lot more downtrodden about a situation that would arise like that, you know, just to live, it would cost us everything. We have to give everything up in order to live. Our lives, even ourselves, our homes, our properties, whatever we might have, all the money that we have to give it over all just to live. It seemed like maybe we would probably think differently than what the children of Egypt thought here. But they were very thankful for what they were allowed to do there in order to have life. Whatever they had to give up, they were willing to give that up. Even the very lands, the things that they had owned, their property, even themselves, in order to have life given to them. And in that we have a wonderful picture of the salvation that we have in Christ. Even this famine here is delivered, just like Joseph. As we've already stated, there's only one place we can go and get saved. There's only one place we can have salvation, and that's Christ. You can't go anywhere else. You have to go to Christ. There's no place else for it. There's no place else that has it. There's no other salvation anywhere. Even though there are those that claim it, there are those that are saying they've got salvation. There are those that are other religions that say if you do this or that or this or that, we'll get you into heaven. We'll make sure you have a place there. If you would just simply do this and follow this work and do these particular rules, then you'll be able to go. But that's a lie. There's only one place that salvation comes from, and that is Christ. And you have to go to Him to receive that salvation. And when we receive that, one of the things we recognize as the children of God is we have nothing left of ourselves. There is nothing in me. In fact, that salvation that we are given in Christ Jesus cost us everything. It cost us everything. And what do I mean by that? I mean that because we are now His bond slaves. He has purchased us to Himself. The Scriptures, the Greek word is doulos. We are made His slaves, His bond slaves. We totally, our lives belong to Christ. There's nothing that is left that belongs to us. And in that, we rejoice in that. As the children of God, we rejoice in our belonging to Christ, knowing that we are His and He is mine, that He has all of it in His hands, that our lives are completely in His control. And so we see here just a glimmer, a picture of what we have in Christ, the salvation that we have in Him, as He gives that to us, that we can get no place else but from Christ. And so they said, verse 25, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt until this day that Pharaoh, rather, would have the fifth part, except the land of the priests, only which became not Pharaoh's. And Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen. They had possessions therein and grew and multiplied exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die. He called his son Joseph and said unto him, "If now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt. But I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place." And he said, "I will do as thou hast said." And so Jacob makes Joseph swear, carry him back. To bury him with the fathers. And he said, "Swear unto me," and he swear unto him. And Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head. So Israel was relieved. Jacob was relieved that Joseph was going to do what he asked him to do. Of course, again, he was staying 17 years in the land, and at 147, Jacob would die, excuse me. And we see, we'll come to chapter 48, Lord willing, next time, and we'll see these events of Jacob's death, Jacob's life coming to a close, as Jacob would in chapter 49, especially as he gives his sons his blessing there, or it wasn't really a cursing, but it was in many cases a lackluster blessing that he gives them. Gives Judah the place of the firstborn as he blesses them there in chapter 49, and then in chapter 50 we have the Jacob's burial there again in Canaan, and we read then of the end of Joseph's life in chapter number 50. And so we're coming very quickly to a close here in the book of Genesis as we are finishing out Jacob's life, and very quickly following that, Joseph's life. And the children of Israel find themselves in the land of Egypt, where they will spend a great deal of time in captivity, four generations that they will be in captivity in the land, as they are positioned there by God to save them alive, to bless them, to make them a vast nation, but at the same time, the greater part of that time period in captivity to Egypt, as he will eventually bring them out when we come to the book of Exodus, of course, as Moses will lead the children of Israel out of the land. All right, let's all stand, and we'll be dismissed.